Hello, everyone, and welcome to Radio Radar, episode 96. Sorry for missing a week. You know, we try, but we're all out of town. But hey, this is Henry Gilbert, the host, and I'm here with, let's start with you.
Ashley Reed.
Lucas Sullivan.
Lorenzo Valoria.
Tony Wilson.
Yeah, and we're the writers for GamesRadar.com, the website that's really cool. I feel like we
the
don't
only
give
writer.
Enough.
Oh, yeah!
That we're, yeah, that's right.
So we have a soundboard.
We do have a soundboard today, too, which Tony is in control of, which I'm trusting him with that.
Which we might regret later.
It shouldn't be too random.
That's so random.
Dane Cook?
God,
that is
was a
Nick Swarston. Thank you very much.
I thought that was Nick Swarston.
He's quite funny.
No!
I can already tell, Tony, you are going mad with power right now.
Will be reamed in.
The second segment will just be like, well, Tony is no longer an intern with us. We wish him all the best in his future career.
Tony is no longer with us.
With us. Yeah. What other slogans do we have for Games Radar? We have a few we were thinking up. Like, I like high five with words.
That's yeah.
That was fun.
Your pit stop on the internet superhighway.
The internet superhighway's favorite rest stop.
Yes.
Yeah. Roll off the tongue so well.
I was really happy about my suggestion that got real far, but it didn't quite
got
make
to
it.
The finals, and then a loss to mine. Yeah, dog.
I actually suggested the same one, so I think we have to. Well, share
let's not I saw that. Yeah,
we let's were, not spoil it for.
Yeah,
anybody.
We wouldn't do that. We
just stay tuned to the home page.
Pound because my hands are sweaty.
Gross.
All right, well, guys, enough of that disgusting talk. It's time for the first thing we usually always start with, the top seven. The top seven this week. Do we have a top seven theme?
We don't have a jingle. If you have a top seven jingle that you would like to create or suggest, send that in.
We are rebooting the podcast. We need some new sounds.
Yeah. Ones that don't reference specific editors. Hopefully,
we have a new community segment.
That's good. All right. So this week's top seven, written by our pals in the UK, the top seven most annoying phone calls. So I'm sure you guys are used to this IRL of getting a phone call out of nowhere.
Yeah, just can't keep those breezies off my phone.
I missed my cue, but I have one for this.
They
the
keep
top
blowing
seven
up your
what,
phone.
Henry?
And most annoying phone calls.
I'm not getting any of these references. Yeah. I feel so out of touch.
I like that song. I don't know what it's from either.
I don't remember where it's from. It was just in my head, and I was like, that'll work.
That's could good. Have done the Banana Phone song as well.
Oh, from Raffi?
Yes.
Banana Phone. Or there's the, guy, that thing that was only popular in the UK, that weird little frog thing.
Or you could do, can you hear me now?
Good. We could reference cell phone company ads all day.
Can you hear me now, guys?
We should probably instead go to number seven on this list.
Number seven.
Zeke's nuisance calls from Infamous.
Hey, buddy. You don't know me. And that's likely for the
this
best.
Is actually from Infamous.
I was there at the beginning.
Or second son,
well,
so deal with it.
Anyway, I've got some advice for you. If you're willing to listen to an old hound dog like me.
Doesn't sound like I have much of a choice.
Yeah, you don't have much of a choice. Like, he's just in your ear. Zeke is an example of a lot of these guys, but Zeke's just an annoying dude. Like,
I made it a point to beat him up when I first encountered him in Infamous. You can, I believe, knock him unconscious. And you have to wait for him to get up to continue.
And it's just like, how are these guys friends? Because Cole is such like he's just a shaved-headed douchebag. Guido juicebag. He just doesn't really care like about anything. And then Zeke's just like this annoying ass. He's like the guy, Zeke's the guy that Cole would beat up in elementary school.
Maybe they became friends in elementary school, like when they were both just kids, and then one grew up cooler than the other, but they just sort of like stuck being friends.
Like in 21 Jump Street.
Mm. Big Wolf on Campus.
No. Or 22 Jump
Street. Oh my God, Ashley, this is the beginning of something special. That's the greatest show on television, let me just say.
Big Wolf
on Campus.
What?
It was on ABC Family?
Teen Wolf?
Yeah. No, the no. Big Wolf on Campus.
It's so much better than Teen Wolf. Merton, my boy. All right.
What?
This is a conversation.
Yeah.
Boy,
this
is
all not
have
worth
that
having.
This is a conversation you should not be having.
Ever.
Stop. Yeah.
In my presence. Should not be having.
I feel like they softened up Zeke some in the sequel just because like people hated him so much in the first game. Like, and then he's the dude, spoilers at the end of Infamous 2, like he's very important at the end of Infamous 2. Mm-hmm. He's like carrying around Cole's corpse after, like, you know.
Jesus
spoiler Christ. Warning.
Spoiler warning comes first.
He did say spoiler. That was a heavy spoiler, though.
Eh, who even cares? Honestly, like, Infamous Second Son, like, resets it. Infamous 2, like, if you haven't played yet, I feel like this could be a whole editorial, but I think there is, like, people are too worried about spoilers to a certain point. Like, I think after 2 years, if you haven't beaten a major, like, AAA release, then it's on you, buddy. You had 2 years.
That spoiler actually made me want to play Infamous 2. So.
I was actually told once, don't put spoilers for BioShock. The original BioShock, it came out too recently.
What?
What?
That was
last year. I was told this.
My God.
Yeah, that's, well.
Who, Henry Gilbert?
No, I'm betting it was Alder Cooper, maybe. He said that. But, well, I know Cooper was extra stringent on, like, spoilers. Like, Batman Arkham City was a big one for him. When he first came on, he was like, it was right after Arkham City came out, and he was like, Games Radar is known as the site that spoiled Arkham City. We got to get away from that. Like, be real careful with spoilers. And I was like, we accidentally spoiled it based on a preview, like, they showed us. Yeah. Like, they showed us this preview, and you were meant to assume a certain thing, and then we wrote about it because that's what they wanted you to.
Well, in the very beginning of the game, they, like, make you think the same thing that happens right at the end of the game. So it's like, it's cyclical, when you're doing that in a preview, when you're showing, like, the early stuff in the preview, it's just like, why can't I write about this?
So Zeke's annoying.
Zeke is annoying.
Number six.
Aiden's endless chatter.
I always thought it was Aiden
from
Watch
Dogs.
Himself. Either way,
Aiden Pierce.
A creeper.
Wait, so you took the sister to dinner?
Yeah, not as hot,
but she's got a crazy perfect ass, all decked out in these tardy heels and short dress. So she's sitting next to me, right? She's pulling my hand.
A little hot in here, guys.
No
all right,
way. Of course, there I am, hard as a fucking.
Okay.
Thank you.
I just want to know who talks like that on the phone. It was very articulate. Everybody.
Yeah, we'll see. On the other end of the phone.
Was that guy talking to his buddy? Like, on the phone about that?
That's just how guys talk, man.
Oh, man.
Talk about this stuff all the time.
Sounds like that's news to Lorenzo.
No, that's.
I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, there you were, hard as a freaking rock.
He's just kind of a. This is what I felt after I played Watch Dogs recently, was that it made me feel like I was always being rude when I walk and look at my phone at the same time. Because I was just like, I think Aiden looks like a total dick when he's early in the game. Like, this is one most people harp on because it's early in the game, and so you see it. But, like, you just have your talking to your sister, like, yeah, you know, my son's pretty much doesn't talk to anybody, and he's gone catatonic since his sister died, and it's been a really tough year. And you're like, yeah, I know, it really is. Like, okay, your phone. Yep, totally sucks. Hey, I see you bought some stuff here.
Yeah. It's like a comment on today's society, man. Mm-hmm. Everybody's walking around with their phones up.
Yeah.
Aiden's just a douche.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I don't like that. I don't like him so much. I mean, his character design, how they sneak in emblems. He's just like, he's just a dude wearing clothes, but then, like, the thing that's on his back is totally like the Watch Dogs emblem, like those mix of triangles and shit.
Yeah.
Same with the same mark that's on his dumb hat.
I really don't like the Aiden character design at all. He just looks like too much of a normal guy. I think it's the baseball cap. It just doesn't.
The opening of the game also took me out of it because it's like, all right, this is super real Chicago. They're at a game of the sports team. Maybe they couldn't get the rights to the Cubs or whatever. I didn't even try. Or maybe it would have cost them like $4 million. Who knows? But like, if that had been a Cubs, like, it immediately takes you out of the veracity of the universe when they're at a game that should be a Cubs game or a White Sox game, and it's neither. I don't know. You guys weren't feeling that at the time, but
I don't know. I didn't really pay attention to like who was playing. I just knew it was a sporting event that I was at.
It was a neat opening. Yeah. But yeah, that Aiden, like, there's just constant cell phone chatter the way the game works. Like, your phone is magic, and it's just always it's always listening to people and just telling you their secrets, which, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of just...
magic phone.
It's just the way that... it's odd because the game doesn't really have too many cutscenes, I guess. So, like, they just have everything explained to you via phone. And when games do that, it's just kind of annoying.
You guys want to know something Watch Dogs related that blew me and Coop's mind when we learned it?
Your collective mind.
I'm ready.
You know, Jordy, the LaForge? Asian... Not LaForge, although he's the better Jordy. Jordy, your cohort in Watch Dogs, who's like
the
cleaner.
The guy in the opening?
Yeah. He's voiced by Chief Tyrell from Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, I thought it was Tyrell.
What?
Tyrell.
Do you mean Edward James Olmos?
No.
I don't watch Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
It's it's Chief. No? Okay, never mind. No.
Is that the
I'm
bald guy?
That is
the rest of our minds.
No,
are
it is not. It's the engineer who.
I may be getting confused with Babylon 5 in my head.
That's possible. I don't know Babylon 5.
It's a better show than Battlestar Galactica. Overall.
All the shows that Lucas watches, no one
All I hear about Battlestar Galactica is like, oh man, it pulls you in so
Wait,
hard.
You never watched it?
And then
it?
In season 3, it is shit. It turns into absolute
Have
crap.
You watched any of it?
Nah.
You should do that.
Nah.
So video games.
If I may, because perfect segue, Henry doesn't like Battlestar Galactica, but he does like Babylon number 5.
Ooh.
All right, good. all right, number 5 is You're Ruining My Life, Hotline Miami.
Music that pumping here. Soundtrack.
That soundtrack is the greatest.
When paired with that phone call from before, makes a sick remix, which...
Let's hear it.
Okay, remix.
I want to hear this remix.
Wait, so you took the sister to dinner?
Yeah, that is hot.
Opens up
Except
track.
It's gonna get really,
oh, yeah. All right.
Really sexually charged.
It was on
intro to a porno.
Yeah, basically.
All right. So, whom played Hotline Miami here?
So much
myself.
It's so good.
Me.
Yeah.
Myself.
I played it for about 10 minutes.
Dude, you were distraught by Hotline Miami.
Dude,
I remember
it was the most gruesome game I've ever played in my entire life.
Extremely violent.
Yeah. It's all like 8-bit, but. Like, as soon as you kill a bunch of people in this apartment building...
Kill the hobo.
Yeah, you run out...
In the alleyway.
Yeah, in the alleyway. And you run out in the alleyway, and then the guy just pukes. I've never seen that before.
It doesn't matter if it's
8-bit. It's him getting used to the hyper-violent world that he's into, and it gets easier for him every time, man.
I mean, even, like, in games like Tomb Raider, like, when Lara Croft's supposed to be all distraught that she killed all these people, she doesn't puke. Like
this guy, I think she should. Well, yeah. Now, her stomach should be empty at that point, though.
She has nothing to
puke. I mean,
puke.
She should heave, at least.
Coop had a good point back when that game came out that, like, with a woman in the thing, you can have them show, like, some vulnerability or they're, like, they'll cry at the start. But if at the start of, like, the first Uncharted, after Nathan was, like, in some deadly situation, if he was just started, like, crying, you'd be like, everyone would feel uncomfortable, I think. Like, I think it's a negative... stereotype
we'll
of
get
men
there.
That they can't
Gaming
feel.
Will get
like,
there.
They're not allowed to feel anything.
Wouldn't it be the most badass thing ever if, like, Lara just killed a dude, like, mutilated his body, and then, like, threw him off a cliff, and then, like, that was the first time she did it, and then she just puked, wiped it off, and then killed another dude.
Wiped it off, and like, I'm ready for more.
Yeah.
All right.
She gets there. Blood all over her face. She gets there.
I don't
know. The phone calls, though.
What phone calls this is referring to. Is it
well,
the ones that start each
the
mission?
The ones in between every mission that...
Yeah.
I don't have it pulled up, but I believe Andy's point was that they kind of interrupt the otherwise, like, pace of the game. Like, it's very much a rhythmic always killing.
Yeah, I thought they were kind of cool in that they're basically cover-ups for go kill this building full of people.
Well, they're the only thing that gives the game something of a story.
Yeah.
Because honestly, that game, it doesn't need one. It's just insane violence.
Mm-hmm. No, that's what I like about the world of it is there, but it is like it's just a puzzle game. Like it's a puzzle game that involves bashing people's heads.
Yeah. You have to realize, like, if I hit this guy with the door, that'll distract the other guy. I'll have time to kill him before he shoots me while taking a dump.
There's like, door, oh, okay, open door, shoot, blam, up, didn't see that guy, okay, open, blam, shoot, go, up, that guy now, go.
I threw a lot of toss cues around corners.
Yeah, I didn't play it until on the Vita, and it made the twin stick shooting easier for me than, I'm not a mouse and keyboard guy, fella.
Man. I played it on PS3 myself.
Don't have that coordination.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to playing the Hotline Miami 2.
Wrong number.
But yeah, the phone line is central to the game. It does kind of like break up the thing. And then like it becomes so annoying to the main character that he goes to the phone company and murders him.
Lucas, did you have a favorite part of the soundtrack? Because everybody seems to have their favorite track.
I totally do, and I'm not remembering the name of the song.
I ask you because this is Coconuts, Silver Lights. I'm not sure which of those.
This is when you're waking up, like, effed up.
And you answer the phone.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if Coconuts or Silver Lights is the name of the song, but
it's a goodie.
I enjoy it. Yeah.
Right, let's move on to number four.
Number four.
Stop and Talk from Gears of War.
I just lost my fucking brother, all right? You hear that? My brother! You and your tower and all this fucking emulsion can go to hell!
We'll settle this shit another time, Phoenix. You can count on that, bitch.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ice-T.
Ace plus voice acting.
Boy, Ice-T was not very nice to Marcus. Yeah, I think Gears of War, like, this one made a like trope, like it became a trope of the hand to the ear, walking slow. Like I'm listening, that's why I must walk very slowly while I listen. And
look for ammo that I will pick up the second this call is over.
Yeah, that was the worst. I would just walk around in circles, just like I
don't want to talk about this anymore. Same with like. It was kind of a cheat, and then they'd have the invisible robot show up to open a door.
Yeah, and then the worst thing was when you if you died, then you'd have to do it again.
Yep.
I mean,
I think Batman borrowed it. Like, what other games have like done it? That do you think? I know Batman, the Wolverine Origins game did it too.
What was he even putting his?
Well, I mean, it was the 1970s, but he still he had military tech. He was taking.
Two of his claws, messages. Like he was doing the little phone thing.
Remember Me
hand.
Does it.
Oh, yeah, Remember Me definitely does it.
I guess I kind of accepted it in Batman because he does that, like, in the comics.
Yeah,
the,
he does that in comics all the time.
To borrow from Gears of War, breaking the pace is just not a good one. Like, the things they did with cover, awesome. Games should use that, and they do now, but don't use the walking around with your finger in your ear.
Yeah, shoot, blow up things, shoot. Oh, hey, what's up?
It's them trying to make it look like they're not doing a cutscene because everyone hates those.
Well,
but then they're doing it anyway.
Exposition is needed. Like, you need exposition to explain where you're going next like that. But when story doesn't really matter, then you're just like, let's have them walk and listen. When those pop up, they're annoying. I think the most important like story aspect of those Stop and Talk things is that like that's how he talks with the Anna, is that her name,
Anna,
his love interest, the blonde woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, I think that's the only way
gets her own cog armor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah,
it was nice when the ladies got to join in Gears 3, though. Yes. Then it opened up like, all right, this is a game where you can now mutilate women. Finally, you can cut women in half with a chainsaw.
I
am 100% okay with that.
Upside was the multiplayer wasn't 8 clones of Marcus Fenix.
Nah, everybody played as the cowboy, man. Everybody played as him.
Rusty.
Yeah. That was who you'd want to pick. All right, number three.
Number three.
Hey, cousin! From GTA 4.
Come bowl with me.
Nico, it's Roman.
It's going to be bowling.
Let's go bowling.
Yes! It's bowling. I knew it.
What were the other ones? Darts, movies.
Pool.
Just getting drunk.
Let's
seeing
see
stand-up comedy.
I think that was one of them.
Like, you almost don't even care what happens at the end.
Well, like, at a certain point, if you ignore enough calls, you're just constantly getting calls, like, every second of, like, fucking gameplay. Like, I went bowling with, what's his name?
Roman.
Yeah, like one time I said, this is lame.
Yeah.
And then just, I want to go blow up some cars. So I just ignored him for the rest of the time and just, it just won't stop. Like, you should be able to put a block there.
Yeah, that would be
just spice things up with that new Happy Meal mod.
Yeah.
Anybody see that?
What?
No.
Okay, so Happy Meals have that horrifying mascot now. It's the Happy Meal box with
Happy
Joker.
Oh my god, you can like push out the eyes. Mm-hmm.
So someone modded that in as your character in GTA 4. And watching it get a lap dance looks like it is eating the stripper. It's hilarious.
Oh, yeah, all those phone calls, like, they were kind of annoying from anybody, but when it's, like, Roman with his very, like,
abrasive
accent, and, like, that he's meant to be, like, that's how they made him. Like, he's an annoying guy. Like, I wouldn't feel less annoyed when I got calls from, like, Patty or Bagman. No, Badman. Not Bagman. Badman. Like,
Batman?
Bad man. Bad man.
Nico, it's Batman. I need your help.
Yeah, but they all were annoying. Like, I think the phone calls got less annoying in 5, right? They lightened them up anyway.
Well, they were between other characters that you cared about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You were more invested. Well, you're supposed to care about Roman. Like, he's the dude he's your first contact in the game, the first other character you meet, and he's your only family connection. Like, you're supposed to give a shit about him. Like, you shouldn't be going, God, another call from this guy. But I think it's also because those minigames weren't all that fun. And so when I got those phone calls, it wasn't just that it was like, hey, cousin, like that was annoying. It was, play this bowling minigame. It's not so great.
Suddenly Mario.
You should play this game with me.
Yahoo.
With me. You got to strike.
And like, and once you played those mini games one time, that was enough. Like, you don't want to play those.
You never want to play them more than once.
If you played one of those mini games, you're like, okay, this category of mini games, I'm not gonna play pool with you.
I guess I can play pool, and it's good to know that feature's there. But I'll move on with my life.
I could play actual pool, you know,
or a
that.
Pool game.
It was like, probably the
game that's dedicated to it.
The developer that was in charge of doing those mini games was like, I want people to play this fucking game that I worked so hard on. Let's just have them call every 5 minutes.
Yeah, every 20 minutes there should be a call telling them to play this game.
Yeah,
that's in the developer's rider.
Just snuck
fine,
it in
if
there.
If I make hopscotch, you better make them play it.
That's why it was so much better in Red Dead. No cell phones.
Oh, yeah.
I only want to play games
for a
now.
Carrier pigeon.
I only want to play games now that take place before the invention of cell phones. All right, number two.
Number two.
The endless exposition of every Metal Gear Solid game.
Snake, are you okay? I've been better.
How's Meryl?
They've got her.
Damn. Harrowing stuff.
Kodak.
It was very inventive in the first Metal Gear Solid. Like, that much spoken dialogue and all that background. Like, you didn't get that in other games at all.
Yeah, back in the day, you just wanted to hear people talk because all you would hear before was like, rah, 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 rah.
Even in early, this was a 98 PS1 game, like 3 years into the system. But even then, like, you didn't hear that much spoken dialogue. And that was, like, quality spoken dialogue. Like, you look back on it now, 16 years later, there's some stilted acting in there. It's not great acting, but compared to what else came out in 1998, it is amazing. Like, it is amazing dialogue.
Yeah, and then there was those things where if you dug into the dialogue a lot more, you'd get all those little references to, like, movies and stuff. Like, when you talk to Mei Ling on the save screen and stuff, she would talk about movies with you.
I feel like that's just a save screen trope. Because, like, in Snake Eater, every time you call a paramedic, save, she goes, have you seen this movie?
Well,
they
kind of set the
scene to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, it started with the Mei Ling, I think.
Well, that felt almost like a fake dating sim to me then. I'm just like, hey, do you want to hear a cute girl talk about movies with you for 20 minutes? We put that in here.
Well, that
actual girl
Kojima
never
loves
would.
Movies.
Have you seen this movie?
Mm-hmm. I said Hideo Kojima loves movies. That's his way of inserting more of that trivia.
He's a freak
too.
About that. He loves talking about it. And I remember just starting up. Every time I started up a Metal Gear game, I think, like, will this be different this time? And then 30 minutes of talking on the on the Kodak. I'm like, nope. Definitely not. It is slightly different. I think they're alleviating that in Metal Gear 5 a little bit, or they're trying to, like, that they're... You have a walkie-talkie, but no visual, like, you are hearing it as you walk around. You're still going to get a lot of messages, though.
But it can play, like, under...
as you do stuff. You're just listening to it as you do stuff. Same.
That's not bad.
Fair enough.
Did they not do that with Guns of the Patriots? Or am I misremembering that?
They had Kodak calls in Patriots.
But, it would... Guns of the, number four, you could walk and listen, mm-hmm. but you also did, you start up the game and they're like, all right, time to get to action, Snake. One step, take a knee. Otacon pops
like, why
up.
Why even let me play for that half a second? Yeah. Just let the cutscene go. Don't tease me.
So yeah, they could. I think that's how they're dealing with it in Metal Gear 5. Is that when I, so the demo I saw at E3 of Metal Gear 5, the real Metal Gear 5, not the demo they sold for $30.
The one with the pooping horse.
Yeah, the demo I saw with the pooping horse. It starts out with like. To get around long exposition, they just do it all immediately. Like, you're riding up on a horse with Revolver Ocelot, and when he could tell you this on the battlefield, he's just like, hey, so Snake, here's what's going on. This guy got kidnapped, and then this happened, and then you got to go here, and he's over in there, but you could walk around, and you can also do this. And, yep, and then he just kept talking and talking and talking, setting up the environment, and then it, like he's walking away, and then he turns back for like, oh, one more thing. And yeah, it was. And I also I've heard people speculate that there will be a lot of scene. They can only afford so much Kiefer saying things, and so that there will be a lot of people saying thing. It'll be like that episode of South Park where Chef came back after his death, they just go like. So, Chef, is it real? They'll just say, like, so, Snake, I guess you're really upset that they killed your friend, and now we're going to go in there and go save them from these people, right? Yes. Okay. I'm worried that will end up happening. But.
Well, one thing that you'll definitely hear.
That
oh, no.
ringing sound, by the way, like, I have been in multiple meeting, like these like group demo things where someone's phone will go off with that noise.
Yeah.
And then like three people will look at their phone. And like, really, all of you nerds set your freaking phone message sound?
That was the thing to do when you could customize your ringtone like back in the, what early 2000s.
Yeah. I mean, there's better stuff out there like this.
We'll come over this table at you.
I would much prefer that. Or the, even that stupid frog thing. That,
I think he just had deja vu.
The crazy frog stuff.
Look, I was trying to think of another reference. Give me a break, guys. Number one Ooh. Is Dead Rising's Stop Calling Me.
Otis, I don't care about your porn. I'm trying to survive the Mall of Willamette. How about you just take your little... your little transmitter and just sub it, okay? Thank you. I'm gonna take a drink now.
Yeah, Otis never shuts up. Yeah. You guys remember from Dead Rising, right? Like this, yes. Otis would always call in, but Jesus, this game doesn't, like, this is an 8-year-old game. Like, it is so old now. Because one of the complaints I was gonna make about it is like, yeah, when you play it on your SD TV, and I'm like, wow, when was the last time I played
it? You couldn't read the text.
Oh, yeah, my God. I actually did play it on an SD TV like 2 years ago and sitting pretty far back, so it was just like, oh, my God, it's crawling over to the TV.
And those things still exist? Like, who still has a CRT?
My roommates.
Oh, gross.
There is something I'm noticing lately walking around, like, just both the Bay Area is seeing... Anytime somebody moves, like, they can't sell their old TV anymore, so you just see, like, all these houses shedding their old CRTs, probably just to be taken to the dump, because even, like, a 30, 40-inch one, people are like, what do I want this shit for?
Well, yeah, LCD, the flat screens are so cheap now. You don't need to have a CRT anymore. Mm-hmm. They're so gross. when I see one, like, at a restaurant, I'm like... I don't think I should be at this restaurant.
Man, how poor? How bad does this restaurant do that they can't afford?
It's like, if this is the quality of their entertainment, what is the quality of their meat?
Like?
It's like Taco Bell quality, probably.
A real correlation between old TVs and old beans.
Oh.
Yeah, the walkie-talkie thing, it got better in the sequels, I would say. And two, you could at least... listen and swing a bat at the same time. Though another thing that was annoying about it was that they cheaped out on dialogue. Like, it wasn't spoken dialogue you were listening to; it was text on the screen. Mm. So you
do those like grunts that start. It makes you think, like, they're gonna talk.
Hey there.
Yeah, and then just
that's what Zelda does. But Yeah, when it's more acceptable because they never talked.
Yeah, I was just
the
playing.
Alternative is the banjo just.
I think that's great.
Oh, I love it too.
I was just playing. I just picked back up A Link Between Worlds, and yeah, I thought it was that came to me when you first meet Hilda, the alternate universe's Zelda.
Mm. Yeah,
that she, her first line of dialogue when she sees Link, like she goes, like audibly you hear, "Hey!" And I was like, oh, is she going to start talk? Oh, no, that's just her grunt to match Link's.
Hey, yeah. Listen. Hey.
No. No.
I kind of like that because it kind of sets up for your imagination as to how they should
sound.
That's
what it's about. It shouldn't be spoken dialogue.
I feel like you still get some of their personality in there. Like Zelda talks in a very slow kind of weird way and Midna is like,
You still get the feel for it. All right, and so those are the top seven most annoying phone calls.
Oh, you want another ring
let's
ding?
Let's get that. Yeah, one more time.
All right, ring ding.
To close the segment.
Okay. Oh, where'd it go?
I'm good. It's cool. We're all
I'm going to find it. I'm going to find it.
You're ruining the moment, Tony.
I don't know where it went. So...
All right. The time has passed.
Okay, you know, we don't need it anymore.
It is fast.
All right, so we're going to take a quick...
Found it.
All right, so we're going to take a quick... Thank you. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's the current events section with some new previews and reviews and stuff.
But going into this...
Oh, fuck.
There it is.
Thank you. All right, yes, yeah. Going into this, there's some music from who, Lucas?
So I talked to David Nottingham of Dynamite, who are making Counter Spy for PS4, PS3, and PS Vita. It's a pretty cool Cold War era spy game, and they gave us some music we can play as a sort of intro outro, and then I will be interviewing him later on in the podcast, so stay tuned for that.
All right, now the break and current events. All right, and we're back to talk about current events, everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody prepare. This is a longer one. You can talk over these. That's perfectly
acceptable.
Is this
acceptable. An HBO thing?
This is not.
Okay.
This is a...
This is really long.
So if you have a community segment or a current events segment... Feel free to send that in.
Yeah, send us your jingles. Send us.
I
your
like
jingles.
That one.
Your shorter jingles, please.
Brevity is the.
I think I just googled like channel action news and found something.
I think it's cool when we get community jingles on here.
Definitely.
Well, so the only current event you wrote down, Tony, was that the UK has a they're doing a contest for UK readers only.
Yeah,
about
UK
making
readers
assassin.
Only. Mm-hmm. You can design your own custom assassin.
Arno.
Yes, your own custom Arno. And then you reply in the comments there with a link to your build. And you could win an actual figurine of the assassin you created.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
It's a sick deal.
I tried to make an Arno, and guess what? That website don't even work outside the UK.
Boom, boom, ba-doom. Sorry, guys, but hey.
I'm deeply envious.
You know, I've seen enough times where people say, like, why don't you guys do more, you know, why you do all these U.S. only contests?
Yeah, this is our just desserts.
Yeah, here you go, guys. Like, this is the UK thing for you right here. UK
oh,
only.
Oh, good for you.
What is that from?
That is Christian Bale.
Christian Bale freaking out when he was on Terminator.
He was in the right there. That guy was fucking up. Yeah. Like,
it's like, stop fucking with the lights.
Yeah,
you're not
getting in my eye line. Like, he's trying to be in a universe in this made up stupid universe to act out this scene where like robots are trying to kill them. He's in this very real world, and then like some idiot just walks by like. Oh, I gotta mess with this light or something. Like
that's so random.
It's like when
that was a random story.
It's like when Lucas is trying to write a feature for Games Radar, and I got a laser pointer, and I'm just pointing at his hands.
This is circa 2012.
Yeah,
it is hard to focus on stuff. Well, there's one news thing. We didn't really write any commentary things this week or editorials on it, but there was one news thing I'm interested in. Just that there is. a new Smash Brothers character is going to get announced on Monday. Whoa. I'm very excited about that.
This is
This is the first time that they've said. I don't think I need to comment on that.
No, No.
I think this is the first time they've just said we're going to have a new announcement. Watch out for the trailer, kind of thing.
I did see a retweet of the alternate costumes, which were pretty darn sweet, and it finally confirmed that yes, there will be a female villager for.
Oh, that was already known.
The female villager. News to me.
But the
that's the news that matters.
Are they
news
mostly like palette swaps?
Well, so the two that were in the big image was one was like Samus in like an all white and black armor.
Yeah, I didn't recognize that.
I didn't know where that was from. So you know, this is one for the corrections commenters and tell me. But the other one was Mario in a red, white, and blue like star spangled coloring of his outfit, which is not just made up. Like, that was his cover outfit in NES Open Golf Tournament for the NES. Like,
beautiful.
So it was known as like the USA Tournament in Japan.
USA.
It'd be cool if like Samus had a dark Samus suit.
Oh my god, that'd be like, great.
All that kind of stuff. But I guess they might just do new characters if they did that kind of thing.
I just wonder if they're going to sell them or not.
But I just love I don't think they'll do that. But I just love their character reveal trailers. Like, they're just so involved. They look so freaking expensive. Like for the price of those things, Nintendo could have made like four indie games, or like financed four indie games for the price of those. But
that's the cost of marketing.
But they're great looking, and I also love that they're kind of trolly. Like he's the one that basically looked like a Mario Kart trailer that then Kirby appears in. Then all of a sudden, like, oh no, this is the Rosalina trailer,
suckers.
Yeah, and then the other one, everybody wants Mewtwo to be in the game, and then in the Pokemon trailer, they what ended up being Greninja, they silhouette Greninja to make it look very much like that is Mewtwo.
Those tricksters. There are two pieces of. Oh, sorry, go on.
No, go ahead. You are already talking.
Well, there were two pieces of news that. I found mildly interesting this week.
Oh, are you changing the topic?
I am.
Oh good for you!
That is to say, the Battleborn MOBA from Gearbox getting announced, which it's just crazy that so many people are trying to get on the MOBA scene, and it's like, that. I think that ship sailed already.
I don't know. There's, well, I feel like...
I will never be part of the big three, which is League, Dota 2, and... basically Heroes of the Storm, I want to say.
Not Heroes of New Earth?
Nobody give me a break. Yeah, Smite's actually... No, Smite's probably the number three right now. Mm.
Well, I think they are hoping that it can be like... Borderlands was... You put a first-person perspective on Diablo, and this is a first-person shooting perspective on MOBAs.
Yeah.
But I get it, but yeah, it is like... Of course you're going to see this stuff. This is making people billions with one game.
Bank. Oh,
and if you're like just a business, if you're the person running, say, you know, Gearbox or 2K or whoever, you want that kind of money. You see that a dedicated single player game like is not going to make you that kind of money. Like it's a much more busy marketplace. So
true.
It makes me sad to an extent that I'm like, can't
not
League
a MOBA
just,
guy either.
Can't League and Dota just be like the NFL for this, and then nobody else will bother? Like is it what? There's arena football or whatever. Yeah, the lingerie football league or whatever. Yeah, I feel like it should just be the big guys or nothing else. Like
nerf
yeah,
or not.
I don't know.
Well, I feel like they're probably going to get burned on it when the storm dies down.
When the bubble pops.
Yeah. No, it'll just be like the huge MMO, like the billions spent by companies on MMOs after World of Warcraft.
The gold rush.
Because they were all just like, yeah, we're going to be next World of Warcraft. And then I think in most cases, the best situation for them was they were played for 3 months, and then a new Warcraft expansion came out, and everybody, and 90% of the people left, and then they went free to play the next year. And that's kind of what happened.
The
with,
cycle.
Like, just hopping back and forth, yeah.
The other thing I want to mention briefly was Cliffy B coming out of retirement.
Boss
for,
Key.
Yeah.
To work with Nexon.
To work with Nexon, and that pick in particular does not bode well, because Nexon...
That's so random.
It's not as random as you might think, Soundboard, because Nexon is known for being the pay-to-play archetype that people are, you know, that's what free-to-play used to mean. It doesn't mean that anymore, but Nexon is still doing the thing where it's like, oh, you're rich? You're going to be really good at this game.
You'll be the best at MapleStory or at Dungeon Fighter Online or whatever.
Like, which is closed. Rest in peace.
But they, I mean, those games didn't look bad, and I know, like, Cliffy is talking up that it's, he's like, this will not be pay to win, guys. Not be pay to win. I know you guys were, you guys are as doubtful as I was. Like, I read a quote from him and he said, like, oh, when Nexon contacted me, I said, what, the fucking MapleStory guys? Like, so,
damn.
Yeah, I know. But
that's harsh. That is harsh.
But I wonder if it means that the Nexon were just the guys ready to pay the most. That they were like, that he maybe he took it to EA and he is like, well, we'll support it X amount.
They practice what they preach. Yeah. They paid the most.
Yeah, exactly. They outspent to win the game.
Exactly.
Like, and I wonder if maybe it's Cliffy B going like, yeah, the U.S. market, you know, been there, done that. Let's see if I can take over Korea or Europe.
Crack that Korea.
Well, no, I mean, well, definitely Korea has such dedicated audience of free-to-play gamers.
If, like, you hook them, then
if you can get, like, if you can
build it, they will come.
Lineage, like, the games like Lineage that are still just super played.
There are more than we have time to name.
I read a reasoning for that. One reason they think that free-to-play is so big there in Korea, where they do have, like, you can buy, you know, consoles there. Like, you can buy console games there. The reasoning I'd read that people live in, like, family homes or with like their extended family amongst their homes, and, like, to get a private moment to yourself is very difficult. And so just to get any, like, kind of peace and quiet to play a game on the computer, and so you'd rather go to a internet cafe and just play for hours there just to get away from your family, just to get away from grandma.
Get me out of here.
I also thought it's probably, like, you can keep your account no matter where you log in.
Yeah.
So you don't have to, you could just be on any cafe computer and play.
I don't know if this is the case anymore, but there was, I know when, like, the Game Boy came out that there was some embargo on selling Japanese made electronics in Korea, or that they, like, had to sell them through a Korean electronic company in South Korea.
Just bizarre.
Anywho. Yeah, those were both, like, two sides of the same thing of just, like, oh, you, like, you've enjoyed these real games these people made before? Well, they're not making those. Like, I also read that he said that Cliffy said he had talked with, or he had meetings with the Zynga dudes.
Oh,
he
God.
Said the former Zynga boss, like, was 45 minutes late to their meeting. So,
wow.
Not even a little surprised.
Yeah, they probably think they can do anything they want.
So, yeah, games are dying, guys. Oh,
they
that's the real.
Straight steal games from people. So.
They're probably just waiting for Cliffy to make it so they can then steal it. Like, make this first, then we'll steal it and make it ourselves.
Yeah. One day, the giant will fall.
Let's move on now to the previews of this week, starting with Lucas.
Yes.
You saw something called Natural Doctrine.
I saw it before the break, and it's to my great shame that I didn't write it up until we got back.
But, all right.
This is a super, super hardcore tactical RPG, JRPG.
Ooh.
And this is up your alley, Henry, except for the fact that this game has a Dark Souls mentality of, you're starting this thing for the first time. Well, you're not going to win. You're just not. You have to die, try again, die, try again, die, try again.
Well, I mean, that's how I'm used to playing Fire Emblem, for example.
Well, then Natural Doctrine's going to be your jam.
A natural fit?
Yeah. It harkens back to Tactics Ogre from the PS1 days. That's so late. And the graphics also harken back to PS1 days.
This is the one.
From looking at the preview, it didn't look as ugly as you say.
Are
they just doctoring up the
screenshots? I mean, he showed me the screenshots and it looked pretty.
Those graphics on PS4 is like, whoa.
It's a relative thing. It's like, what are you doing?
Whoa, bro.
Okay.
Whom is making it?
It is made by Kadokawa Games, which that
they
is,
published Lollipop Chainsaw, I remember.
Yes, and it's being published by NIS, so it's out in Japan already. It came out in April, and even Japanese players were like, wow, this game's really hard, which is saying
know.
A lot. Yeah, because Japanese gamers seem more willing to put up with difficulty.
Or at least the
walls.
Outspoken one. Yeah, that the Japanese games were famous as, like, at least in the olden days, that their Japanese versions were harder than the American.
No mercy.
That's why we have Super Mario The Lost Levels that came out later.
No, The Lost Level sucks. Like, it's not a good game. Like, right. I'll say that right now about Mario. Like, well, not that it sucks, but it's just like it's too cruel. Like, they made it for people who had played. They made it for an audience that had played Super Mario Brothers 1 for 700 hours. They're like, well, you know every trick from Super Mario Brothers 1, so we have to be super cheap. And, like, it is a way of making a sequel that Nintendo never did again, like, at least with Mario games.
They learned their lesson. But, yeah, Natural Doctrine seems like it's not a game for me, per se. Like, you can't just be, you know, casually into tactics games and try this out. You'll probably have a bad time. But if you're the person who's thinking, like, Fire Emblem, yeah, that game was easy. Like, that was a cakewalk. Mm-hmm. This is gonna test you in ways you've probably been craving for a while.
Is that on the PS4 only?
It is cross by PS4 and Vita PS3. Although I don't know if does cross-buy work between PS3 and PS4 also?
Well, yeah, I mean, you
anything's
get
really
it.
Done that.
They
yet.
Don't talk to each other, but you can't buy it. Like, no, when the system came out, like, I owned Flower the day the PS4 came out because I bought it on the PS3. So, like, cross-buy, cross-save? I don't know.
But it's just like in your list and you can pull it down to
another
device.
It's just for free.
That should be the case in this case, then.
The case in this case.
Yes. The case.
A little word.
Did they give a date for it?
Nesting call.
September. I apologize if I get this wrong. You can put in corrections. I want to say 24th.
Okay.
Of this year.
I'm excited for that. But man, if it had just been August, like, it'd been easier. It just would have fit in my schedule better.
I think they were putting schedules. The finishing touches on the translation and the UI and all that.
All right, and then there's another preview. Like, can we even talk about it, The Sims 4?
No. I can say that you're going to hear more about it on Monday.
That's what I thought.
That's what I can say. And
look forward to it, then.
Yes, and if you like Sims, you're gonna love this. So
I would hope so.
I guarantee
it would be weird if you said, like,
if you love Hotline Miami, you'll love Sims 4.
If you love Sims, I don't know.
It's bad when...
don't worry.
When... journalists, quote unquote, do that with review embargoes. They're like, I can't talk about it, but you might want to save your money. It's like,
it's
you,
like you just
did.
Talked about it.
Yeah. I have rarely done that, and I've only done it when it was a positive thing where I've thought, like, the only time I can think that I've done that, it is fun. It is a fun, superior feeling for me. To imply on the internet, I'm playing something right now that you'd want to play, but you can't. Because you're not as important as me.
Yeah. You don't have access.
Yeah. You don't have access that I have. You know, it can be a nice perk.
So power trip.
Check this out, backstage.
But the only time I can remember actually doing that with a review was Super Meat Boy. When I was playing Super Meat Boy back in 2009, I wrote on Twitter, like, I can't say I'm reviewing Super Meat Boy, but boy, do I wish I was playing Super Meat Boy right now.
But I think I can't talk about it, but
maybe we should.
It's very, very, very positive things. I
okay.
Think.
All right. Let's move on then to something you can talk about, Ashley.
Yes.
The review, the big review of this week, The Wolf Among Us.
And let's keep it spoiler-free just for those out there like myself who have only played a little bit.
Apparently
there
are big
way it ends
poppin'
is.
With the ending, though. Apparently people were confused by the ending.
And I actually was confused as well. You think that everything gets kind of hammered out, and then all of a sudden something comes up, and you're like, wait, what did you figure out? What did you figure out? And they don't tell you.
So it's like a season 2 cliffhanger?
These lips are sealed.
Okay.
Nicely
yeah.
Done.
So, all right. So I must have been kind of a weird situation for you writing the review, because Cooper had reviewed the previous four entries,
yes,
and
but
left
not scored
just,
them, right?
And had not scored them. And no, I think it was like a fluctuating score. And then once he left, like the week after he leaves, like, yep, Walk in Wolf Among Us 2, or 5, out now. Like, so.
It's true. It was a little odd, but I think he and I'm assuming, in a lot of ways, felt the same way about it, and we thought the same things were good. We thought the same things needed improvement. Mm-hmm. So it didn't feel out of place.
All right, so in the end, just overall of the season of Wolf Among Us, like, was this another, like, home run for Telltale?
I think so. I actually, when I had first heard of it at PAX way back, I was just kind of like, oh, what the heck? This doesn't sound very impressive at all. Then I played it, and pretty much the same thing has happened with every single episode I've played. I'm like, this is amazing! Again! And they they did it again with Cry Wolf, I feel like. I feel like it was the conclusion we needed to see, and it's great. And all your decisions actually mean something. They really do!
What?
Well, that is cool that that you, in figuring out, like, you have to pick throughout all the episodes, like, you're picking suspects, you're choosing where to investigate, and that can have, like, real consequences if you pick the wrong one, right?
Like, exactly, because there'll be situations where you're like, well, I have two places that I can explore, and I know evidence is going to be destroyed at the second one, so I got to choose carefully. And things that you do there will come back to haunt you in ways that you didn't expect. Like, oh yeah, remember me? Remember that thing you did to me? Now I'm going to get you.
No.
Oh, crap.
And the acting, the writing, all that stuff, still pretty good?
Like, yeah, it's all very solid. The one complaint that I've seen a little bit is that Snow White isn't in it too much. It's pretty much the story of Bigby there at the end. That's pretty much the one complaint I've seen, is like, there's not enough snow. It's just kind of the story of Bigby, but I don't really have a problem with that. So if you personally, that is your thing, then sorry. But but I thought it was pretty good.
Okay.
It's all very strong.
Well, I mean, it is called Wolf. It's not called, like, Snow White. Maybe in the
She's
second season,
but
Snow White can be the main character of that one. Like,
and there are things that you didn't know about certain characters that are going to come up that may surprise you a lot.
You mean if you were, say, if you're a reader of the Fables books, right?
Well, no, not necessarily. Like, things that have been coming up in the series.
Okay.
Like, oh yeah, that character seem so sweet and nice. Oh God.
All right. Okay. Well, I played the first episode, and then I just decided to wait till the last one came out.
Same here. Exact same thing.
Yeah.
There are definitely some ups to that, because then you'll get to see all the shocking revelations one right after the other, and it's going to be like, what's going to happen next? I can find out right
now. I don't
now.
Have to wait. It's like binge watching something on Netflix.
Yeah.
Exactly.
As opposed to, like, waiting your turn. We're all very impatient right now. But society.
As a whole.
So I don't think this review's finished yet, or I don't think it's
drafted up.
All right, let's hear. Oh, wait, no. What was your score?
Is it embargoed?
Oh, my score.
Ashley?
My score was 4.5 out of 5. If I could have given it 4.9999, I would.
Well, that's not the scale we're working on. You need to learn that. So, time to get used to that. We're not one of those places that gives something a 93%.
So late. None of that nonsense.
Tony, I think the embargo is off on that.
Like, there is no embargo.
Yeah, I mean,
it was
out.
A Japanese
it's out
release.
Now.
Yeah.
Like, but. All right, so you're playing One Piece Red.
One Piece
something?
Unlimited World Red.
One Piece Red World Unlimited something.
Cloth.
And since no one else at this table cares, I'll just run through quickly.
People in the community do care about. They
do care.
Yeah, they did reply. They're like, no, we do care about One Piece.
I was very that was nice to see.
He's got stretchy arms.
He loves One Piece. He does.
But I mean, it's a game for the Wii U. Like, that's kind of a big deal in itself.
It is Wii U, PS3, Vita, and 3DS. But basically, if you like the series, you're going to like this. There's a ton of fan service. There's kind of an issue, though, that, like, if you're like, oh, I kind of want to see what the series is about, it's just not a game to do that with.
What kind of game is it? A fighting game?
It's a brawler.
Okay.
So you're going, you know, mission to mission, point A to point B, and beating people up along the way. There is a Battle Coliseum mode, which lets you fight, like, the bosses again or hordes of enemies and stuff. One of the issues, though, is that you can't actually fight against each other, which is lame, because that's all a manga game is a fighter. So that's kind of lame that you can't go against each other. But if you're a fan of the series, it's really good. There are you get to revisit a lot of old places. The story itself is from the actual author, Eiichiro Oda.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's, I don't believe it's canon, but it is like officially from him, so it's still like entertaining. It's not just filler.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, I don't want to talk too much about it, but
that's okay.
I hope you understand that, Tony. But
it is totally fine.
No, but well, so I guess it hasn't posted yet, so we can't call a score. But did you thumbs up or thumbs down? Let's just say that.
I mean, I'm gonna give it a thumbs up again as a fan.
Okay, cool.
Don't play it if you don't know One Piece, because they don't actually explain anything. They just throw you right in and flashback to a ton of stuff that you might not be familiar with if you haven't read the 750-something chapters.
Sweet Jesus.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break now and then hear some more music from that...
Counterspy.
And then we come back, a quick old community segment. And we're back for the community segment. Hi, guys.
Community segment on Radio Radar. We read your stuff if it's good enough.
Shout out to
I love that.
Really
who
like
was that?
One.
Who was
that? Was Dango Mushi. Put that in.
That was a really good. That was a really good song. Yeah.
When I first heard it, I was a little creeped out, but now I'm absolutely loving it.
Great. I'm still in the creeping out phase.
Yeah, man.
But it works.
You need to listen to it like
it grows
two
on
more
you.
Times.
All right.
Like, I mean, not now, obviously.
All right. Well, so first off, people did, like we said, people there were multiple people who said, I like One Piece. Like, so
so thank you, everybody.
Yeah, we all underestimated One Piece's popularity in America.
Well, yeah. Well, most of the comments are like, we do love it, too. But yeah, it's not big in America.
Yeah, it will never be Dragon Ball.
No. It's so much.
All right. Well, you said you had some corrections.
Yeah,
like,
we do have some corrections. So Bladed Falcon is correcting us on some Shovel Knight stuff, which we talked about 2 weeks ago. He says the downward thrust in Shovel Knight actually works way more like in Zelda 2 than how it worked in DuckTales. DuckTales allowed you to pogo on any surface, whereas Shovel Knight in Zelda 2 require you to hit enemies to bounce. He also says, I think this is more for you, Henry. The guys at, actually, he said Yacht Club, I think. Anyway, Yacht
Sounds
Club
like
games.
You need a correction, Bladed Falcon.
Guys at Yacht Whoa. Club Games are actually responsible for Double Dragon Neon and Blood Rain Betrayal.
So the bad ones.
The bad ones.
No. That what?
No, Betrayal.
Blood Rain
is,
Betrayal is ass.
It's not very good.
And then
but it looks good.
I didn't play Dragon.
No, Double Dragon Neon is legit.
I heard that was crappy as well.
You heard.
It's okay.
Well, it depends on what you're wanting out of it.
Mm.
But Betrayal, pretty, like, yeah, not that good. If I remember the moment when I gave up was when there's one arena where you have to, of course, take out several enemies, except there's no floor. There's only poison. And you then have to take out every enemy by jumping off of their heads to stay afloat, which is not at all an easy thing to do in that game.
Ooh, sounds like a legit platformer.
No.
I need to get on this game.
You need to play Shovel Knight, dude.
You would love Shovel Knight. You would love it.
I mean, we had this conversation.
You and I should both play it and then compare
Games Radar gave it a 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah.
All right. I'll go buy it on Steam tonight.
That sounds like a
come on, play it on the Wii U.
I'll play it.
Oh, wait, you don't have a Wii U.
I'll go buy a Wii U tonight.
For Shovel Knight, you might be you're a rare breed.
There's enough things to play on it now. Like, I would say it is the Wii U is a good second console to have at the very least.
I keep saying to, like, buy a Wii U just to show up people who had no faith in Bayonetta, but now actually I'm starting to take that point seriously. There's more and more stuff.
As soon as I pay off my vacation that I just took.
Just put yourself into debt.
Yeah.
All right. So now
we have one more correction. One more from Shockstar, who says, objection, Lorenzo.
Oh, my God. I am never wrong about anything.
You, my friend, clearly seem to be playing the wrong games regarding motion being used in shooters. If anything, I point you to at least try Metroid Prime 3/Trilogy. It uses motion in a shooter-type atmosphere gloriously, and it's a shame it's being used nowhere else.
Okay, I did play Metroid Prime
back in your prime.
2 and 3. And Metroid Prime 3 had really good motion control first-person shooters. I will admit, that's really good. And I don't remember what point I was making 2 weeks ago, but general, it's all kind of ass. Like,
it's the exception that proves the rule.
With the exception of Metroid Prime 3, I will say that. You're right, Shocksta. I hate you. and maybe Red Steel 2 was kind of cool.
Yeah. Not many people played Red Steel 2 because Red Steel 1 was very not good.
If you haven't played Red Steel 2, go play Red Steel 2. I
haven't
still
played
good.
That.
You
All
should
right.
go play that. So
you
now
play Shovel Knight, I'll play Red Steel 2.
Now the community segment. I mean, the continues.
Don't do it, Tony. Don't do it. Oh, you did it.
It continues with the question of the week from 2 weeks ago. Again, like, we... there were technical difficulties. I'm just going to take the blame on that one. Like, Tony did his best to save it. We did record an episode for last week, but it was like...
Got fracked up.
Maybe we hand that out as a prize. You get to hear the missing episode.
Hear the missing episode and then share it with everybody. But hey, who cares, man? We got... You had 2 whole weeks to answer this question of the week, which was to win a download code for Valiant Hearts.
Yeah.
And I think you collected the winners, but Tony, you said pretty much everybody won.
For the most part, if you responded, you're getting a code, so good for you. None of you really know what a war letter is.
Yeah.
You all mostly wrote poems, which is it's fine. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the response.
I'm going to go quickly through some of these and skim them, but like BKO, I believe, was the first one. He wrote, he actually did write a letter, like, "Dear Hollander, I haven't played Valiant Hearts yet, so I don't know how this theme goes. I do confess I find it ironic that I'm being asked to, dodges mortar, write a letter in the style of a game I haven't played in order to win that game. I mean, what is this all about? Play the game in order to understand the game, in order to win this contest, to win the game? Is this a joke? Does Henry know what he's doing here? Is this podcast in good hands? I don't know. I'm just a dog. I think there's a letter writing dog in the game. I don't know. E3 trailers lie sometimes.
They did lie.
So, yeah.
That sounds pretty legit.
Yeah, BKO wrote a pretty good one, I have to say. Easy peasy lemon squeezy wrote, "Dear Cooper, I can't believe you left us, Coop. I liked to listen to you while I having a poop."
We're getting into the poems now.
"You made me smile while I was in sexual denial. You made me laugh while riding my giraffe. I hope you enjoy your time at EA. I'm sure you will cherish every day. Maybe one day we'll meet again." Oh, that is such a wrong way to pronounce it. "Maybe one day we'll meet again. Perhaps we'll go on a holiday in Bahrain. I have to go now. It's getting kind of late. Stay in touch, my one true soulmate. Farewell, my Cooper. It's time to go. Good luck, you hardcore maniac stormtrooper." What?
I think the line before ends at Cooper. But don't blame me. They spaced it out that way.
Whatever. All right. Well, that was the meter was off there. Summoner 666 also wrote one that was actually like a real letter.
This is dropping stuff.
As did Spades Slick, who wrote a letter included, "It is in my time of recovery that my thoughts turn to you. I cannot hope to understand why you were taken from me by an uncaring force of corporate greed, and I never will."
Wait, you don't want us to do any dramatic readings of these?
No, we need. I'm trying to speed these up. There's a lot of them. Like, you guys would just read all of them, and that is what you should do normally. But we really got to go fast. But Tim Groover wrote another poem, which starts with, "O Hollander Cooper, who to your origin came through features of awesome and years of fame. Your presence is missed. Your passion proved. Your GR memory on the site you loved." See, these guys are doing.
You what?
It was loved, but like proved and loved. Like
proved
these,
and
these are imperfect proved. Rhymes, guys.
You
like,
are not
on.
Shakespeare. You can't yeah. do this.
This is not. Yeah, these are not sonnets. Also,
but you still win. So what does it matter?
John Dagger wrote one as well. Girl Draco, of course, wrote an ode to Hollander Cooper. Universal Tofu. Wrote one to Cooper through the internets. I send this in reflection of your videos, podcasts, and reviews over all these years. Punishment also wrote one, which is really short, so I will read it. I have no idea what constitutes a valiant heart's farewell, so I'll just say goodbye and good luck with your future at EA and Excelsior or something.
Yep.
So technically, it is a letter.
There you go.
Grease the wheels on that one.
So yes, those are all of them there. Thank you to everybody who replied. And see how good it is to reply to things that you all are going to get a free Valiant Hearts code.
Yep,
that you could just sell on eBay or whatever if you don't really want it. If you don't really care to play Valiant Hearts because it only reviewed kind of okay, like, or all, like, okay, like, well, plus, right?
The exact definition is solid. That
exactly.
Is a
solid game. So, yeah, but this week's question of the week is... it is for a prize of some sort down the line. Oh, wait, yeah, if you won, email to...
RadioRadarGamesRadar.com.
Yeah. If I could
we
run through
still
them all
don't
real
know
quick.
How to access.
Oh, yeah, say the names again, just to remind.
These are our winners. BKO, Easy Peasy, Lemon Squeezy, Someone666, Spade Slick, Tim Groover, John Dagger. Let's see, what's the other one I'm looking for? Yes, okay, so those seven, you all specified platforms, so just send whatever. But for three of our other winners, Girl Draco, Universal Tofu, and Punishment, we have two Xbox One codes and one Xbox 360 code left. So amongst the three of you, those are the three you have to choose from. If you don't have one of those platforms, like Henry said, sell it on eBay or something.
And the last one gets screwed.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just saying, guys. Like, it's worth money, too. You could sell it on eBay. I ain't going to stop you. It's really easy to sell a code on eBay. Like, I've done it a couple times. Yeah, because you set up... And you set up an auction, like, I'm giving you a code. Hey, you won. Email, boop, there's a picture. Like,
yeah, but I always wondered, like, how do you ensure that you get the money? And how do they ensure
they pay
that
on PayPal?
Does have
and
a buyer
you,
risk.
How do they know you didn't use the code?
They can take back their money pretty easily.
Yes,
like,
they can.
Yeah, it's actually the... Well, I haven't used eBay in, like, about 3 years. But I used to be very hardcore eBay user, and... Yeah, it's more they protect the user, the buyer way more than the seller in those cases.
I'd actually be more concerned for the seller just because how do you stop someone from being like your code doesn't work after they already input it themselves?
Yeah. Well, hopefully that won't happen to you. But
sorry, I just suggested that. Don't do that.
Yeah, you're trying to tell people how to run a scam.
So congratulations on your code.
Yeah. All right, so this week's question of the week, as I was saying, is a little more practical, but a real one, and you will win a prize. And it is so we're thinking of trying out a couple of like more retro themed podcasts, an extra podcast on top of Radio Radar that is retro themed that Tony would be helping us with. But we want to know what you guys would want to hear in that, like in a special like what?
Sorry.
No, nothing. Okay.
No, I got ink on myself and I tried to clean it up and it just spread it. Anyways.
Anywho, yeah, so, right, that's the question.
Yeah, we were passing around the idea of doing, like, a retro-type podcast, so it's kind of unformed at this point. Like, we have some ideas of what we want to do, but, of course, there are a couple different retro podcasts out there, so maybe you listen to some, maybe you haven't gotten into one for certain reasons, so if you have a suggestion for how we should do it, stuff we should include, comment, because this is your chance to craft... Basically, Games Radar's next podcast.
Though, if you never want to hear a retro one, put that too.
Yeah,
but if you really don't want to, like that, but just comment to win something anyway. But yeah, like, did you guys have any thoughts on what you'd want to see retro?
I think I answered this question.
Well, nobody heard it.
So. I didn't
even know this was happening.
This is something that we've been thinking about.
I wanna remember what I said, but I can't.
You have a retrospective
music.
Oh, no, I remember now. I was saying we should talk about old weird games that time forgot, like Michael Jordan's Chaos in the Windy City.
Shaq Fu.
Yeah.
We could possibly...
We could make it only about basketball games. Like, jam it.
Old Star Wars games. I'd be really
games
good at that
radars,
one.
Old basketball games, is that what you're suggesting?
Yes.
And balling, I mean, there's always games radar. There's always each of us being like, here's my favorite old retro game and why.
You used to write those articles.
So, I mean, Ashley, what's retro to you anyway? Like PS2, like early PS2?
Wow.
Oh, shut up.
That's insulting.
That is harsh.
Well, she's very young. That's my joke.
I don't have an insulting sound effect.
If you're so curious, what I played as a child was Banjo-Kazooie. So there.
All right.
So N64.
Why do you have that?
That's Mario Kart, but close enough.
I played that when I was 16. So yeah, I mean, that doesn't make me feel old or anything. more like 17.
You and I were playing the same games at 8 and 16.
I think a fine definition of just like what's fair to label as retro is anything that was like two generations ago. Like, that's old enough that you could be nostalgic about it for whatever reason.
I just, man, I cannot be nostalgic for a PS2 game. It's so hard. Like,
really?
Well, no, it's just, to me, it still feels recent enough. Like, but the PS2.
I wonder if Blockbuster Henry would disagree.
The PS2 was an active system into 2009. Like, I reviewed Persona 4 in 2009 for the PS2. Like, it wasn't dead for that long.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider anything that I played in college retro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You want another fun story, though? I played Final Fantasy X, and then I immediately after that, playing it for the first time, started high school.
Final Fantasy X.
All right. Well, so yeah, that's the question this week. Put it in the reply in the comments about what you'd want to do with a retro show, what you'd like to see, if you're interested, if it piques your curiosity. And I guess that's kind of it. Let's see. Definitely. You know, be sure to subscribe to this on iTunes and review it.
Well,
and
just a reminder, our interview with David Nottingham is coming up after this.
That's right.
So if you want to hear about a pretty darn cool indie spy platformer, and I've played it, so I'm not bullshizzing here. This game is really fun. You should stay tuned.
Yeah. And follow us on Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff. And until next time, Radio Radar out!
Hey guys, this is Lucas, and we're joined by a very special guest today, David Nottingham from Dynamitey. How's it going, David?
Hello. I feel very special.
You are indeed. Now, you came here to talk to us about Counter-Spy today, correct?
Absolutely. I can talk about Counter-Spy. I can talk about whatever you want.
Yeah, for any listeners would be good. That don't know about Counter-Spy, can you give a quick rundown of...
Sure. So Counter-Spy, it's the debut title from our studio, Dynamitey, the game is a side-scrolling action stealth game set during the Cold War, so it's got that kind of 50s, 60s vibe, espionage, definitely sort of riffing on our collective love for, you know, Bond, the sort of stylized trappings of that era. It's coming out for PlayStation 4, PS3, and PlayStation Vita.
Right on. And I was actually lucky enough to play it at E3 Judges Week, so I have a good sense of the game, but I want to ask you more about the in-depth details of making Counter-Spy.
So, yeah. Do you want to know a bit more about the gameplay, how it plays? Or?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so it's it's character-based side-scroller game, The objective for you as a game playing the game is you're an agent for Counter. A Counter is a rogue spy agency, so you're not a sort of CIA or KGB. It's almost if you kind of think of the bombed world, it's like if Spectre were the good guys, right? and so it's very much a sort of hyper stylized world in keeping with the art style. If people have seen any of the gameplay footage, it has a very stylized look.
Yeah, for sure.
That's definitely carried over into the theme and the tone of the game as well. The plot of the game is that these two superpowers, which in our game are the imperialists and the socialists, they're going toe to toe and they're locked in this epic space race. They are not trying to put a man on the moon. They're trying to destroy it with nuclear missiles. So if that sounds like a bad idea,
that's messed up.
Enter player as an agent of counter. You have to stop them.
So how'd you get the idea to have the player be sort of that third party that's like messing up both sides' plans?
Well, I suppose, you know, we're being huge fans of like movies like Bond and sort of those espionage thrillers, a lot of the more serious fiction usually has you as this government agent, right? Like Bond is a MI5, and mm-hmm. And then there's the crazy despotic sort of supervillain that's off doing this
Blofeld,
with this crazy,
is that his name?
Right? Blofeld or like some guy that's like, I'm gonna reflect the sun into this spot here and destroy the, you know, the world if
ice
you don't
caps.
Right. So it was we wanted to put our own twist on it, I guess, and so it felt like it would be a fun thing to do to sort of reverse that a little bit, and so have the super powers be the super villains in our game, and also just you know, being someone that remembers the Cold War. Do you remember the Cold War?
I don't, and I'm sad to say that history is not one of my strong suits. But
all right.
How did you, I mean, well, how based in reality is the Cold War?
So our game is 100% based in reality. no, it's not, but it's interesting because it does take some cues and inspiration from the real world in that the central plot of you know, superpowers trying to blow up the world with nuclear missiles, it sounds like a crazy Bond plot, but was actually a plan that was developed by the U.S. government in 1958. Mm. This was when the Soviets at that time were sort of racing ahead in the space race, right? And they had Sputnik going around, and on the U.S. side, they were like, oh, no, we've got to do something to... Yeah, like, they're making us look bad. So they're like, well, what can we do? Let's have a brainstorm, guys. You can imagine kicking around that meeting, like, let's whiteboard this out. And somehow from that, this plan to destroy the moon with nuclear missiles seemed like a good idea. Ultimately, they decided, let's put a man on the moon instead, and so that was
preferable.
A nicer, better PR move, but it just felt like one of these crazy stories. And it's funny, too, because like a lot of, you'll find stuff in fiction, you know, that oftentimes things in reality, in history, have been just as crazy, you know. Like, there's a lot of crazy subject matter. And when you start diving into the espionage world, and, like, you look in sort of the real history books as well, there are so many crazy stories.
What did they think was going to happen when they nuked the moon? Like,
I know. Well, I imagine someone probably did an assessment of, like, tidal wave changes and, well, you know, like...
meteorites.
Right.
Shattering cities.
But, yeah, I think their plan was not to destroy it, maybe just put a dent in it, you know. So.
Right on. Now, Counter, the agency that you work for in Counterspy, that is an acronym, correct?
It is.
Can you spell it out off the top of your head?
you heard that pause there. Because that's my brain
this might
going
be
at 1,000 miles a minute. Going,
I certainly
oh,
could
no.
not remember it.
I do know what it stands for. So my quick PR answer is I'm going to say, hey, you'll have to find that out.
Fair enough.
It does stand for something. Yeah. Maybe we will reveal that at a later date.
And I noticed when playing the game, it seemed like so the two superpowers are fictional, but they're mm-hmm. clearly modeled after American and Russian sides.
That like might be the case. That's an observation you're making.
A lot of tongue in cheek.
Can possibly come in.
Was that did you guys have fun with trying to find the stereotypes from, you know, 1960s, 1970s propaganda,
I mean,
and stuff like that?
It was super fun. And I think, you know, it's as a new studio. We're a pretty small group of guys and girls. There's like 12 of us. And we're all bringing kind of our own personalities to work every day, and we're kicking around, like, basically trying to make a game that we really care about that sort of represents our voice. Mm-hmm. And so it was definitely something that has evolved over the course of the game. I think what you would see if you had seen the game in one of its earlier forms to where it's at now, you can really see that shift where those aspects of the game that we were really enjoying, like the humor, poking a little bit of fun at the powers that be. you know, we definitely started to dial that up a bit more as we felt more comfortable kind of in our skins. Mm-hmm. Mark, who's our art director, you know, he comes from Pixar, and he'd worked on movies like The Incredibles, you know. Right. And so there's a sort of playful tone to some film like that. In terms of it evoking an era in sort of a loving way, but also, you know, not afraid to be playful and have a bit of fun.
Very cool.
Yeah, and I think it's funny thinking about this earlier. Like, I think for us, there's a lot of serious games that you can play, and certainly in the sort of stealth action genre, which is where we're sort of playing with this game. Like, I'm a big fan of Splinter Cell, mm-hmm. you know, but those are very gritty, serious games. And I think for us, like, we just wanted to let loose and have a bit more fun with sort of our take on the Cold War.
Right on.
You know, the Cold War is like a very, you know, not necessarily playful era in our history.
Far from it.
But I think also, you know, using humor to sort of shine a light on things is also, you know, a good approach in yeah. entertainment. And it is a game. Like, we think you don't have to be a history major to enjoy our game.
yeah, always a good thing.
Yeah.
now, I had seen the announcement trailer when you guys first announced Counter-Spy, mm-hmm. and it seemed like there were a lot of subtle changes between that and what I played earlier this year. Mm. Like, the main character used to be kind of like a featureless James Bond, I guess you would say.
Right.
And now it's a very stylized, like, shadow with eyes, essentially.
Right.
What other subtle changes happened between then and now?
So I'd even go so far to say as there were a lot of less subtle changes in terms of the game's evolution under the hood. Like, on the visual side, definitely, you know, we were still early in the development of the game, and so finding that visual identity for the game was something we were still in the process of figuring out, mm-hmm. right? And it's kind of when I talk about how we just slowly started to dial up more of that absurdist, more of the stylized look. The main character went through a lot of redesign. It's always one of the hardest characters to
design.
I can
imagine.
For a game. Yeah, because it's not just you want to create a character that's sort of interesting, that's engaging, that people necessarily want to kind of embody in a game, but it also has to be a character that's very controllable. So from a design and mechanic point of view, it has to be very agile and do the things you want to do. I think the push more into the mysterious, enigmatic look was really wanting to, on the one hand, sort of anonymize him mm-hmm. a little bit more as a character, so kind of representing, you know, a mysterious agent more than like this is so and so and this is his backstory.
don't yeah. want to get too mired in like the personal history,
right? Well, yeah, and it's not like we're not a game with like a $1 billion cutscene budget or anything like that. Like, it's very much intended as an accessible pick up and play game. And so and then the other thing was the stealth aspect of the game was really an area that we pushed a lot more since you would have seen one of those earlier trailers. And the more we started to get sort of robust stealth mechanics in the game, the more you're creating this persona who is about kind of sneaking around, using cover, and then that just lent itself more to the visual look going more in that way. So giving it more of a shadowy look just kind of fit. It just felt like it fit where the gameplay mm-hmm. was going.
Cool. And in terms of the gameplay, which we haven't really touched on, it's sort of your navigating in 2D, but there are segments where you can take cover and shoot in a behind-the-shoulder view.
Yep.
How did you guys come up with the idea? It seems very much like stealth boiled down to its core fun elements of you just want to sneak around and you just want to shoot people, and the parts where you're, you know, like creeping up super slowly or hanging on walls aren't as engaging.
Well, so you do, you can still sneak up behind people. You can still hang, you can like hang on ledges and pull people down. you know, like I never get tired of doing that stuff in the game, but we definitely approached it from the point of view of wanting to sort of simplify down to its essence what the game was. And the cover-based mechanic was really interesting in that, you know, when you're early in the development of a game, you don't necessarily know what the game is that you're making is going to be. Like, you'll have some idea of the endpoint, but along the way, you're sort of trying things and you're putting stuff into the game, and then you're going, oh, wow, this is really cool. Like, we didn't think this was... and so the cover mechanic was one of those. It was... we'd originally intended to play the game where you would only see the character in the world from that side-on view, you know, playing kind of to the roots of it being a side-scroller. But we kind of realized at a certain point that we were building the whole game in full 3D, using full 3D assets. And so then we started toying around with, well, maybe we can, like, adjust the camera so it's a little more cinematic. And at first we thought we were just thinking from a cinematic point of view. But once we did that, we realized that that kind of opened up the space a lot more to have these different shifts where you'd have combat. So now you've got guys moving in and out of the space, and you've got this targeting pop and shoot element to it. So, yeah, that
yeah, it
was
works
like
out a, very nicely.
It was definitely one of those iterative processes that we we kind of honed as we discovered it. Yeah,
very cool. Now, a lot of people when they're playing stealth games are very particular about how they want to get through a level. So some people like to just run and gun until they've gotten to the objective. Other people like to be like the ghost that never gets spotted, that never kills anyone,
right,
and just goes through undetected. Does Counterspy allow for these different kind of play styles?
So you can play the game. You can run and gun. There are weapons that are geared towards that that don't have silenced you know, silences on them. You can also, there's always, like in any military site, always has a healthy amount of highly explosive barrels lying around. our game is no different. So you can generally cause a lot of chaos. One interesting thing about our game, one of the guys on our team had pointed this out to me the other day, was, you know, a lot of games are built around the core premise of, like, player starts at point A, has to get to point B, right? And then there's all these obstacles along the way, but your ultimate goal is get to point B. In our game, we've got this sort of interesting mechanic where you're trying to collect, you're stealing all the launch plans that these superpowers have for their plans to launch the rocket. And these launch plans are placed throughout the levels that you're exploring. So
hidden in like lockers.
Right. So taking that direct A to B approach isn't the best way to finish the game. in fact, the game's going to be getting progressively harder the further in you go. So collecting, taking your time, exploring, being more stealthy as part of that is definitely something that benefits your style of play. But at the same time, like, if you come into a room and you've managed to take a few guards out, nobody's seen you, but then, say, someone sees you, you get spotted by a security guard, all of a sudden the DEFCON's going off, things are going a bit crazy, you can just shoot everyone, have a big shootout, and it's not a game over situation. It's not a, oh, no, I have to restart. You can pretty much move into the next room, and then everything's sort of normalized again, and you can go back to being stealthy.
Yeah, I did notice the doors between rooms are kind of like those super heavy vault doors, so it makes sense that, you know, you wouldn't hear a shootout from the next room over.
Well, of course, and realism is super important to us with the with our game.
Now, I remember there being a super cool a DEFCON meter that carries between levels. So if you are, you know, not very stealthy in a particular level, you'll set off high alerts, and that carries over between levels. So you want to be switching between the two superpowers to sort of manage that. How did you guys come up with that?
So it was one of those things. Well, we wanted the player to be making choices going between the two different superpowers, because it was kind of the central premise of the game. Mm-hmm. And so we were trying to think of a way to encourage that rather than just force the player, like, hey, player, you just played like three missions on the social side. Now we're automatically forcing you. You know, we wanted to put that control in the player's hands. And we spent a lot of time prototyping this system. It's another one of those things where there's like stuff on the cutting room floor where we thought, oh, maybe this will work. Like, we had this doomsday clock concept for a while that was more of a global version of the DEFCON that kept moving forward.
Oh, okay.
One of the things we sort of ditched that, and we ditched that largely as we were testing it with gamers. We were finding that people who didn't understand it, because we built it, so we understand it, but we found people weren't really grokking it.
I imagine that comes up a lot in games.
Yeah, you have, oh man. Well, it's one of the things, right? Like, you're so close to a game that you just cannot trust your own eyes when you're making decisions. So it's always good to get, we always try and get like fresh eyes, people that haven't played the game in before, to test, and it's always surprising things that you think are people will understand.
Totally obvious.
Right. So the DEFCON sort of emerged out of us wanting to put a decision in the player's hands and give them the sense of choice. It fits the fiction of the world. It's reactive to what you're doing in the game, so it's not something that's just being forced on you. You know, the decisions you make in the game. Hey, I had a choice. I could have not been spotted by that camera, or that guy on the radio that was radioing in causing the alert to go up. You know, you have to then adjust your gameplay style to go take him out. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted it to be a system like that that existed in the moment-to-moment gameplay. The other aspect of the DEFCON that was interesting, and this was something else actually that we came in sort of came later in the project, was having officers in the game, and officers being these sort of cowardly dudes that if you can get them into an area where there's no other guards around, they'll surrender, and that's how you lower the DEFCON. So you know how, like, if you play a game like, I don't know if you played Lethal Enforcers back in the day in the arcade, you know those old light gun games?
Yeah, the bright blue one.
Right, so you'd always have these like civilians that would run across and you'd get penalized if you shoot them, and so you'd be like, it's like moments like that that always stick with me, where you've got a sort of, it's a decision that you've made in the game yourself. Like, you shot someone that did, and it didn't benefit you, so you're kicking yourself.
It's their fault
you
for
know
jumping
it
up.
Was,
like,
well, you know, and it, but it was your fault, you know, and you're sort of kicking yourself. So that was a really fun mechanic.
Very cool. Now, you talked a little bit about the art director had worked at Pixar on The Incredibles. How else is the team sort of composed? What have you guys have in your repertoire?
Well, yeah, there's a bunch of us that worked at LucasArts.
Oh, okay.
And some of us were on the same team at LucasArts. So I'd worked at LucasArts. I left in 2010. John, who's my co-founder, we were on the same team. And then Grace, one of the other designers, she'd worked at LucasArts. Devon, in fact, once when LucasArts closed, which was super sad, you know, I left at that point, but it's still sad.
Still
you had
part
a lot
of, you.
Of amazing people there, and we were able to pick up a few people. You know, we're still small. There's 12.
Yeah, I mean, it's about as indie as it gets.
Well, it's funny, right? To some people, 12 is like, oh my God, you're so big. You know, like, we're two people over here. And then other people, you know, they're like 200-person teams.
For just the graphics.
I mean, at Lucas, so John and I had, we had ran a small team at Lucas called Lucas Labs. And that was an early part of something that we were trying to do there, which was to make interesting digital games, be more experimental. We did the Monkey Island Special Edition game that came out, and we did a game called Lucidity that was like a very artistic, artsy
game. Oh, yeah, that was a puzzle game.
Yeah, sort of a puzzle platformer, and we were sort of just basically the team was sort of finding its sea legs at that time, but the company as a whole decided that they were just going to switch and just focus on Star Wars. You know, we've got this big, and it's hard to argue, right? Like, we have this, the most successful intellectual property in the world. Why do we have people working on a game about someone's grandmother passing away? So, yeah, so our team ended up largely going on to become the 1313 team. But at that point, John and I, you know, we really wanted to work on smaller teams. We kind of really learned a lot, and that was a big part of what gave us the confidence to actually go and start Dynamite. Was having had a little bit of that experience at Lucas.
Yeah, it seems like you guys were kind of ahead of the curve, given the Ubi Arts framework stuff that's going on now, and how so many developers are wanting to go branch out into more experimental
stuff. It's funny. I was just thinking about that the other day too. Ubisoft. I think you guys talked about that on your last podcast. Talking about Valiant Hearts.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And they're a company that I really have always respected. Like, they make really awesome, interesting games, big mega games, and seeing them do these small games too. And honestly, like Sony. I'm going to sound like a bit of a homer here because we're working with them. But, you know, I think when you look at what Sony's doing, they have their big Naughty Dogs doing Last of Us. But you've got, you know, teams like us that have sort of found a home working with a company like Sony. I think it's a really exciting time for the games industry. And also as a footnote, you know, Sony launched Entwined at E3. The two of the guys on that team, Dom and Jeff, also worked at LucasArts. They were part of the same team. We worked together at Lucas Labs. So it was a really nice sort of poetic sort of what goes around comes around, like, hey, from that sadness, there's sort of a rebirth and a renewal. So that's been really nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, I guess to sort of wrap up here, David, what is your favorite spy game besides Counter-Spy?
Spy game. Oh, well, if you're picking a favorite, it has to be No One Lives Forever.
I was
right.
Like, I was hoping you would say that.
No decision.
Which I hear is probably going to get a re-release now that the rights have surfaced.
I did hear a rumor that they're working on updating it so it'll run on modern machines, the original, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I haven't played it since it came out. It's funny, too, because it's probably, if I look at that game, it was probably the closest in terms of, like, it's clearly inspired by and paying homage to a lot of the things that we love and are paying homage to. And yet, very few people on our team have played that game because it's such an old game and it's out of commission. And I only remembered about it myself fairly late in our game's development. I think someone who'd recently played it was tweeting about it, and I was like, oh, man, I totally forgot that game. But that game for me was the thing that was so great was it was really well written, great characters, and all those little conversations that you would hear. It had that humor in spades, right?
I remember, sitting, crouching in a shadow, listening to two of the guards talk.
Right.
It was great.
And that's something I hope people will kind of dig that when they dig into Counter-Spy, is I feel like it does have a personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has the little quirky humor. Collecting the various bits of intel in the game is fun, and you get little funny little narrative bits that we've kind of hidden in the game here and there.
I did, spoiler alert, find a couple of the mind control device blueprints.
Once you unlock that weapon, that's a pretty powerful weapon that definitely later on in the game gets very super. Yeah, and so the game has a mix of, like, you've got your sort of standard spy weapons, like our diplomatic pistol, which is the silent diplomacy of a bullet to the head. And, you know, those are your typical ones, but the weapons that you unlock later in the game, if you keep looking for those blueprints, definitely start to get a little wackier and more absurd.
That's good replay value right there. And then, David, who is the best James Bond?
Oh, for me, it's Sean Connery. No question.
Acceptable. Definitely acceptable.
Daniel Craig, pretty good second, I think. Casino Royale was a very good...
That was a real reinvention.
Yeah.
But the classics are always the best.
Yeah, I'm Scottish by birth as well, so I have a little bias there. But, and also just there's a sense of style to that 50s, 60s era Bond as well that just is timeless.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much, David, for coming over to talk to us. What can people do to find out more about Counterspy?
They can. So we have a Twitter feed at Dynamitey, and we post updates and information on there. There's a product page on the Sony website. We also have a Tumblr. a Dynamitey Tumblr, and we've been posting little snippets
like
on
concept
there.
Art and stuff?
Concept art. There's some really awesome music from the game that we posted up there. The music is another one where we've really wanted to nail that sort of 50s, 60s cool jazz vibe.
A lot of guitar.
Yeah, so if people are interested, I mean, we're kind of on all the various different social feeds. Just Dynamitey, come find us.
Very cool. And do you have a release date announced yet or no?
We are releasing in the summer of 2014. So that right is on. This summer that we are in right now.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Dave.
Thank you. Thanks, Lucas.